This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 214 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we this week?
Good, David. Just drove home 300 miles to get back to the studio so we could have a little chat about drones.
Oh, you're so kind to me, driving all that way just so you can actually be in your studio.
Oh, it's much preferable to a hotel room or, as you know, sitting in your car. But here we are, and we've got some interesting stories for this episode.
We do. We've got, this is becoming a regular topic for us, Volocopter, but drones as air taxis. And we've got a kind of Halloween story, a spider mav drone shoots webs. A web-slinging drone. Flirty partners with ambulance services. In situ is developing firefighting tools, which in California we desperately need right now. DJI news, which is the news of the week. And, of course, Max put in the story, we have a Connecticut drone story that involves the police. Never let it be said that Connecticut is not the bastion of armed drones and issues with drones. So I guess with that, we should get started. Well, our first story today comes from Flying Mag by none other than Rob Mark. Now, for those who don't know, don't listen to the show on a regular basis, Rob Mark is one of our co-hosts on the Airplane Geeks and a prolific drone enthusiast. I say that with a bit of sarcasm. But from flyingmag.com, Volocopter completes its first test flight over Dubai. What's this about, Max?
We talked about the Volocopter before, and this is a German-designed device that is intended to be used as an air taxi, an autonomous air taxi. And they have big plans for this. In fact, Dubai is one of the two cities that seems to be especially interested in the Volocopter. And here we see that they've conducted a test. But first we learn that they're rebranding it. I guess maybe Volocopter doesn't roll off the tongue, David, or maybe it doesn't describe what it is very well. So they've decided to rename this the AAT, the Autonomous Air Taxi. I guess that's a better name for the thing if you want people to see it or hear about it, read about it, and know what's going on.
And if you add another T, you suddenly become a very large walker in the Star Wars universe. I kind of laughed at the whole autonomous air taxi. It's kind of got a generic spin on it. It doesn't really emphasize, although the word autonomous, but the way they say it, it sounds like it's just a taxi. You get in it and it'll just fly you wherever you need. And it made its first flight. And Dubai has really been pushing this. I guess we've been talking about this for over a year now. It seems like this is going to happen. It's got 18 rotors and a 30-minute range at 60 miles per hour. I don't know how big Dubai is. I haven't been there yet. But I can't imagine that you're going to ever run out of power at 30 minutes because there's no traffic if you're flying above it.
Yeah, now, Dubai, they have big plans for this. They say that they'd like these autonomous vehicles, and I guess maybe not just these, but also maybe land-based vehicles as well that are autonomous, but they want them together to account for the 25% of all passenger transit in Dubai by 2030. Dubai by 2030. Sounds a little odd. The spokesman for Dubai's Road and Transport Authority said that, quote, ATT is also fitted with optional emergency parachutes. That would make me feel good. 9 independent battery systems.
Hold it. They're optional parachutes. Yeah. Well, that's going to make you feel better? What if you get one of the optional ones that has been optioned out of it?
Well, I don't know that I would take that one, but the logo on the side that indicated whether it has an optional parachute or not could be kind of fun if you have sort of a twisted sense of humor. But also 9 independent battery systems. That's good. Also a quick charge and plug-in system. He says that it takes about 2 hours to reach full charge, at least in the prototype version. And they hope to drive that recharge time down in the production version. So it's quite a thing. They're moving ahead with this. They have a video, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes, that shows the first ever public demonstration. There isn't a lot of detail concerning the public demonstration, the flight regime, who flew it. I do notice from the video, though, David, that there's no one in the ATT. Nope. There's no one in the AAT, the Autonomous Air Taxi.
See, I threw you off that. See, you just called it an AT-AT.
And I guess that's to be expected. First test flight, let's go unmanned. If the thing is autonomous anyway, no need to risk a human being. But again, there aren't a lot of details about the test and what they expect to do next. But we'll be watching because it's a fascinating concept.
It's still awfully close to an AT-AT. Sorry, we had the Star Wars trailer out this week, so my mind is on Star Wars. But let's move on to another Disney franchise. How about Marvel? And we'll talk about Spider-Mav, or a drone that shoots webs for perching and stabilization. This was from SpectrumIEEE.org, a web-slinging drone. We've seen drones that now perch on walls, and now we've got a web-slinging one that helps stabilize itself when it needs to land.
This comes from researchers at the Imperial College London, their aerial robotics laboratory. And they talk about web shooters. It's not really, don't think sticky web like Spider-Man. But this concept was presented recently at the 2017 IEEE International Conference on Intelligent Robots and Systems. That was in Vancouver. And basically what this is a DJI Matrice drone that has a customized perching module that's mounted on the top and a stabilizing module that's on the bottom. Now, both these modules kind of work in a similar way, but for different functions. So the perching module uses actually compressed gas to launch a magnetic anchor. And this would be if you want to perch the drone underneath some kind of a metal surface, a roof or a beam or something like that. So it shoots this magnetic anchor to the material, the metal point, and it has a spooling system with a polystyrene thread. There's the Spider-Man reference right there. And then it can hang via this magnetic device and the thread. So that's the perching module. And there's the state.
Really what they're saying is this thing's got a grappling hook.
Kind of like a magnetic grappling.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a grappling hook. It's, you know, it's firing it, you know, and wheeling itself in. And believe it or not, that's how most helicopters land on ships, is they're winched into, especially in bad weather. They're winched onto the deck. You hook up a winch to the bottom of the helicopter, and you winch it to the deck. That's how most, on frigates and destroyers, that's how helicopters land in foul weather.
Well, there's also a stabilizing module with this thing. And like I said, it works the same way, except that what it does is it fires lines instead of upward to a metal surface. It fires them outward. And then the drone can put tension on these polystyrene lines to kind of hold it in place. And maybe that's a little bit more like Spider-Man, you know, shooting a web off each hand and then, you know, stabilizing himself with that. So we really have seen a number of different perching kinds of drones that work in really different kind of ways. So here we see another concept that's being developed. We'll see what ends up being the most practical and if any of them are commercially viable. But at least we have this other option now.
Can I put in a request for going forward in future show notes?
What's that, David?
Can you refrain from using the word perching?
It's hard to say.
Since, huh? since we've been having trouble, we've been botching that this whole segment. Well, let's go to Flirty. And another thing that we talk about more and more every day, it's an ambulance and sending out delivery of medical supplies. This is from PRNewswire.com. Pioneering ambulance service to launch first emergency drone delivery program in the United States. Unfortunately, that headline makes it sound like they're delivering the drone. But it does, yeah. So drone delivery as in bringing REMSA, or the Regional Emergency Medical Services Authority, to deliver life-saving defibrillators to victims of sudden cardiac arrest. Kind of not buying this, that you want to use a drone to deliver a defibrillator. I don't know, Max. What's your thoughts?
Well, a couple of things. Flirty, of course, we've talked about several times in the past as being a company that is really seriously into delivery of packages or other items via drone, and they've had a number of successes that have been really well publicized, covered in the press. And what we see here is this partnership that would allow Flirty drones, or this service, to provide sort of emergency medical items. Now, in terms of a defibrillator, I think the idea here is that if there was an emergency call, a 911 call, that two things could happen. One is that a drone could immediately launch and bring a defibrillator to the site. And then the other is that the standard medical response team would head in that direction as well. They note that when the victims of cardiac arrest get quick medical attention, they have a much higher survival rate. Now, I guess you've got to have someone at the receiving end, you know, where the patient is, I guess you'd call them, that knows how to operate or can be told how to operate a defibrillator. I mean, I don't think your average person knows how to do that. Wouldn't you say, David?
I know that I went through 8.5 hours of training to be qualified in my office to operate one. So, I mean, it's like CPR. They're kind of self-explanatory, but yeah, I don't know. This is one of those things that I'm just not comfortable with as a use of drone delivery. I don't know what the end result is. You know, it's in a high risk, high density environment where you've got someone who's having a heart attack and you need to get specific medical attention to them ASAP. I'm not sure that a drone delivery to whoever's there is the right thing to do. Where do you land the drone? It's very complicated. I don't know. I'm still more along the lines of, if you're going to send meds, you know, to someone who may need the meds, but it's not an urgent crisis. Or if you're going to go urgent, I kind of like the whole life preserver, being able, you know, on the shore, being able to deliver some sort of that thing. I just, a defibrillator just strikes me as a little too much vaporware for my taste.
So it's not so much the concept of drone delivery that you're skeptical about. It's just this particular application.
Application. That, yeah, it just doesn't, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but it just, the stick on the Star Wars thing, I got a bad feeling about this. I just, it doesn't, I don't know.
All right.
Let's move on.
Well, what about using drones in firefighting operations? Are you a skeptic there?
No, actually, I'm not. I because you're using a trained person, as long as there it's a trained operation and it's working with the firefighters. You know, you don't have somebody. The difference between this is you've got a trained individual working with a tool who knows to use that tool and knows how to integrate that tool in with the rest of the environment that it's servicing. You're not delivering something that someone might or might not know, A, how to deal with the drone, or B, know how to deal with the tool that's being delivered by the drone. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I understand where you're coming from. So we have a story here that talks about firefighting and using drones as a tool.
We do. And it's from the Warm Springs, Oregon Test Center, which we actually had on our guest site. And ScanEagle provided near real-time firefighter data for the first responders. And I guess this is the definition of the test that we talked about when we had Oregon on. They were in the process of doing this test. This is the final results that they were providing real-time data for the real-time actionable data for the firefighters at the time.
That's right. In situ used this system that they've developed that's based around, as you say, the ScanEagle, to test it out in Oregon to help some firefighters with the Eagle Creek fire, a rather large, extensive fire. And the technology that they're using, it includes ground-based command and control, manned and unmanned air vehicles, including the ScanEagle, and a variety of sensors as well as the analytics. So the ScanEagle was equipped with a variety of sensors.
And we talked about this before too, the electro-optical daylight sensors, infrared video for nighttime flights, and midwave sensors. And one of the things that came out in our conversation before was they were flying these at night because normally the air fighters do not have any actionable data over what happens during the night because they're not flying. So the ScanEagle was be able to provide real-time data for them to be able to immediately action in the morning the next day, which was awesome, which meant they weren't waiting for someone to scout out the area and there wasn't a delay in actually actioning on the fire.
And another interesting thing about this report is that it's more than just a drone goes up and uses some sensors. I mean, it's integrated into the entire operation. The in situ press release notes that in this test, the ScanEagle provided persistent nighttime oversight. We talked about that. It monitored the progression of the fire. Okay. In situ coordinated manned and unmanned aviation assets, and through data collection analysis and integration capabilities, they say it produced the near-time geo-referenced spatial data. And thus the incident commanders, the firefighters, the first responders had data that delivered updated incident perimeter maps. It identified hot spots, located the fire lines in the hot spots, and provided near real-time video feed and still images of critical infrastructure and even some historic structures. So, again, point being that it's a piece of kind of a comprehensive process or system that's involved in the act of firefighting or fighting wildfires. So it's a great demonstration. And as you said, David, boy, this is something they could really use with the California fires that are going on as we record this.
And, you know, Max, we don't use the term that often, but in this case, we had a UAS, an unmanned aerial system, not just an unmanned aerial vehicle.
Right.
The Scan Eagle was probably the smallest part of the rest of the process that made it so successful. You know, the aircraft was not necessarily the most important aspect of the system. You know, it was one critical component, but being able to action on the data and interpret the data and provide real-time knowledge, it was far more important than just the aircraft itself. And we forget that sometimes.
Right.
Cameras, really cool cameras, very cool cameras.
Mm.
This is from UAV Expert News. DJI releases the Zenmuse X7. And I actually got to see this. Designed for professional aerial cinematography, a Super 35 camera uses 24 megapixels CMOS sensor with 14 stops of dynamic range. For us photographers, talking dirty to us.
14 stops of dynamic range is a lot. This is pretty serious stuff. And high resolution, 6K Cinema DNG and 5.2K Apple ProRes. This is DJI really stepping up the game, I think. This camera includes, or you have the option of considering four different interchangeable lens, all prime lenses. I think they're f2.8 lenses, all of them, as I recall. So this is really something that DJI hopes to make attractive to professional cinematographers.
It's kind of a little out of my price league right now, but it's starting at $2,699. But if you're going to be a pro and you want the best photographs, this is going to be a really nice camera to hang under your Inspire 2. And interesting, we're watching now DJI move beyond just the hardware, the flying hardware. They're working on the software and the various sensors. And this, they probably just view this as a sensor, a camera sensor, not necessarily, even though the rest of us sort of go, let's play with that. So F2.8 stop is a really nice lens.
Yep.
So I'll leave this story for you because it's your beloved state. And what mischief has Connecticut gotten into this week?
Well, this is kind of a good news story, I guess. This comes from the Fairfield Daily Voice. That's the town of Fairfield, Connecticut. Drones to conduct traffic study on Black Rock Turnpike in Fairfield. And they're using these drones to aid in traffic management studies. Now, this was to have taken place yesterday, I think, and there are stories in the press about this as it was upcoming, nothing yet about the results. But they were to use 7 drones, fly them simultaneously for 20 or 30 minutes during the evening rush hour. And this is, again, in the town of Fairfield, Connecticut, which is, we call it the New York City side of Connecticut. So heavy traffic, traffic management studies being important in that area. The pilots were to operate the drones from the edge of the road with police department supervision. The traffic safety unit was planning to be on site at the time. So that's all the information we have at this point. Don't know what kind of drones they use. They just call them commercially available drones.
Phantom 2s, Phantom 3s.
Most of the articles on this topic are illustrated, yes, with a Phantom quadcopter. But
not a Predator or Reaper firing a Hellfire, huh? Speed enforced by aircraft.
Right, we're beyond that. So great. No details either about sort of the authorization they were flying under, who the pilots were, what their qualifications or, any of that. But interesting that here again, they're being used as a tool, in this case by a local, a town that's taken it upon itself to use this tool to help with traffic management.
Well, we actually got some feedback this week. Our first story actually comes from Mark, who sent us a photograph of a UH-60 Blackhawk. We haven't really covered this yet, but we probably will shortly. Was evidently a Blackhawk, a UH-60 Army Blackhawk, was flying over Staten Island at approximately 400 feet and was struck by a UAV. And there'll be more to follow on. There hasn't been enough, but the National Transportation Safety Board is investigating. And I have it on authority that there will be a interesting report that comes out about this. But check out the photograph. You can see the blade is pretty, it isn't mangled a lot, but it does look like it was struck by something.
Yeah.
And then last week we asked on behalf of one of our listeners if anybody had any listings of vertical takeoff fixed wing drones. And Kenny wrote back to us with this, saying, was listening to the most recent episode, the question at the end of the episode about a fixed wing with vertical takeoff. I don't know of any comprehensive list, but I do have a little list of my own, as I tend to do bookmark neat innovations in the categories to help me keep up with what's going on in the industry. And we'll put a couple of links in the show notes to some of the things he suggested. And he followed up with, I'm a new listener. I was wondering if any episode touched base on super heavy lift units out there. I'm considerably baffled by the idea of something like the Griff Aviation Fleet, which apparently lifts a 400-pound payload. cheers and keep up the good work. Well, you know, turnabout is good fair play. So if anybody knows anything about heavy lift drones, I guess the K-Max would be one of them, but that's an optionally manned helicopter. Maybe that would be something we'd want to cover. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if it flies and it's unmanned, we're interested.
And even if it doesn't fly, if it submerges or drives, we're interested also. If it's unmanned, we're interested. So I guess with that, Max, we should wrap this show up with an apology. We got tied up. I'm in the process of an office move, and Max has been out of town. So next week, we will have the remaining interviews from my trip to Toronto. We do want to get those out because they are quality interviews, and we will do that next week. But it was a good thing to take a break from the interviews to do some news, Max. What do you think?
Yeah, you're being polite because really? See, I forgot that we were supposed to do the interviews this week. So we assembled some stories instead, but we'll have them for next week for sure. Meantime, we want to thank you for listening. This has been episode 214 of the UAV Digest. You can find us, as always, on our website, theuavdigest.com. If you want to go right to the show notes for this episode, well, they're at theuavdigest.com/214.
And Max, we're a team. If we screw up, we screw up together.
Okay.
And speaking of teams, if you'd like to be able to ridicule us online because we've screwed up, you can join our Slack listener team. And you can do that by going to uavdigest.com/team, or you can send us an email at feedback@theuavdigest. You can find us on Facebook at the UAV Digest, on Twitter at UAV Digest. Leave us some feedback on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. That way other people can find us. You can get us purchase some swag on our Cafe Press store or become a patron of the show at patreon.com. And of course, you can always find all of these links as well as the show notes on our website, theuavdigest.com. So with that, I'm going to say this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.